Hello and welcome. On today's show, we talk about wielding the flexibility of financial independence, finding the salary range for your job and moving to the upper end of it, and hunting with eagles in Mongolia. Welcome to the Ultimate Crowdsource Personal Finance Show. This is your Friday Roundup.
You're listening to Choose FI Radio. The blueprint for financial independence lives here. If you're looking to unlock the secrets to financial independence and early retirement, you're in the right place. Stay tuned and join a community of like-minded people who are getting off the hamster wheel and taking control of their lives in the pursuit of financial independence. Choose FI, your home for financial independence online.
All right, guys, super excited to dive into this past week's episode, talk a little bit about pay transparency, finding the range for what your salary should be for an expected job, and optimizing the income side of the equation. I think it's going to be a fascinating conversation. And to help me with this, I have my co-host Brad here with me today. How you doing, buddy?
Hey, Jonathan, I'm doing quite well. I guess I got spring break coming up here. We're going down to Florida in a couple of days. We're staying, I guess, down there in the Naples area for about 5 nights. So it should be a lot of fun.
What I love about your situation and kind of the situation that I found myself in increasingly is you now have the luxury of taking the exact same time off that your kids took off. And I want to find out more about what you're doing, but just in context, just 2 years ago in my corporate job, that was not available to me. Just the fact that kids were off school meant that people with more seniority had already asked for that time off and I wasn't going to get it. And, you know, corporate, and this is not like a slam on corporate, it's just the way that these things works with large companies. They only can have so many people off at a time. So if you're relatively new to a company, you're going to be putting the time in the 10, 15 years in before you're going to get spring break off. So it's kind of interesting that for me personally now, spring break's a real thing. You know, when my son is at an age where we can do something that's significant, we really can't. 2 years old, what are you going to do? Go to the park? You got to be back for bathroom breaks. That's the way it works. But but like in the very near future, I'm going to get spring break back. It's awesome.
So, yeah, no, it really is nice. And I mean, I think your larger point in there is that the flexibility is so important. I mean, if you think about it, for people who are working full time, if your kids are just magically off for a week, you need to take off, right? Or you need to get daycare, right? Which is very, very expensive. So you are thrown for a loop, essentially. I mean, I guess a more apt example would be a snow day. Like, I think about snow days and what people have to go through. I mean, that's really a hardship for a lot of people. Like a random, okay, there's snow on the ground. It's 5 a.m. School's canceled. Oh no, what do I do now? Believe me, I am very aware of how fortunate we are. And I think that's another ultra side benefit of living a FI lifestyle. Not even necessarily being at FI, but just going along that path is you have more flexibility and you don't even think of a lot of these things that benefit you. Also, another one, Jonathan, is not having to go to the grocery store on the weekend when everybody's there. I'm just thinking of these things off the top of my head, but that's a little time savings that like you're not even aware of. We would never go to the grocery store on Saturday at 2 p.m.
when I have done it by mistake. Just a couple times I've gone on a Sunday afternoon, just not really thinking about it and been like, wow, something's different. What's going on? It's so crowded. Why would everybody come at the same time? Oh, that's right. This is when you can go. Actually, Brad, I know this is a little bit of a sidebar here, but I think the point you made is so critical. It's actually worth us spending a little bit more time on it. Like as I'm saying this, I'm visualizing there is someone right now that's listening to this podcast on their way to work, stuck in gridlock traffic for 3.5 hours, like 2 hours, whatever. And for that exact reason, they're excited that this podcast is a little bit longer than average. but I mean, and you accept that as normal. Like you might accept that as normal over a 30 or 40 year career, but it doesn't have to be, right? When you get to the point where even if you're not, you know, retired early, you control your schedule. You've ultimately been able to design a life that fits around the things that you want it to fit around. You don't have that on day one, but you can build that control over a period of time. I think it would be worth exploring just kind of like a few things, a few added benefits that maybe at first glance you haven't considered. What do you think? Worth it?
Yeah, I think it's worth it for sure. I suspect I'm going to kick myself afterwards for not having a complete list, but we could always come back to this. This would actually be kind of a cool thread in the Facebook group, I feel like.
And we could even turn it into an article. Like at some point down the road, like if our community so we'll start this. We'll try to like come up with what the few things that we can come up with on the fly. And then our community, just please give us feedback on this in the Facebook group or on Twitter. We will add those additional benefits in and we'll write a full up article around this idea. Cause I think it's worth it. And we'll have to figure out what the actual article title is, but I mean, it's all these tertiary benefits, most of which have to do with your most precious non-renewable resource, your time. And we just started with rush hour, right? When you are financially independent or when you control your schedule because that power has come to your side of the court, rush hour is no longer a given. It's no longer something that you have to deal with. Like, I love Elon Musk and I love what he's doing, but if you control your schedule, you don't need to have a boring tunnel drilling underneath the planet so you can make it to the center of the universe at the same time as everybody else, right? You can just be at home. You can either work from home or you can go in at the times when everybody's not there. It's just, you have that sort of flexibility. All right, I'm gonna start with that as number one, because I was driving from my way to DC to Richmond and I noticed that traffic in the other way was just gridlocked. Like it wasn't moving anywhere. I mean, I drove for miles. I don't think I saw a car move an inch. It reminded me of that movie from Office Space. I swear there's someone like brushing his teeth inside of his car. He knew he was gonna be there for a long time.
Yeah, I mean, rush hour is clearly a huge portion of this. And like you're saying, this is about flexibility, right? So it's not, oh, have a job or don't have a job. Those are the only options. It's, hey, maybe I understand that this is a 15-minute car ride during normal hours and it's an hour and a half during rush hour. How can I adjust my schedule so I don't have to drive during rush hour? That's just like a common sense tweak that is going to save you a couple hours a day. So if you have that flexibility, then more power to you. So I would say like, look for any times where there are peak hours somewhere. Clearly, I mentioned grocery store before. If you go mid-afternoon on a Saturday or Sunday, it's going to be a mob scene and you're going to just waste time. If you go at 9:45 on a Monday morning, it's going to be empty. You're going to waltz in and out of there. So that little bit of flexibility is going to save you probably 30 minutes a week minimum, standing on lines or wading through people. Jonathan, can you think of any other examples of peak times like that, that other stores, other things in grocery stores that people might be able to save time at?
Well, I can, but before we even do that, I mean, just think about the implications. If the grocery store was something that you had to fit into the weekend, along with the laundry and everything else, you know, like all of your activities, all of your just daily home maintenance type stuff had to get fit in those two sacred days on the weekend, that fills up your entire weekend, right? If you can then reprioritize that to other days in the week, because again, you have significant control over your schedule, it potentially frees up those 2 days. I mean, have you seen that in your own life with your kids where you guys are basically able to just have your weekend for your kids?
Yeah, that's actually one I jotted down. So that's perfect, right? It's even me and Laura, while we're home and we're fine, our kids are at school. So we don't see them from 7:45 until 3 p.m. every day. So there's nothing we can do to claw that back. But what we can do is be available during the weekends because we don't have to run all these errands because we have that level of flexibility. So yeah, I mean, that's one of the big things is if the kids are at home during the weekends, I'd ideally not like to be running to the cleaners and then to Kroger or Wegmans or wherever it may be, right? Doing all these errands because I had that flexibility to do it at an off time. So I save time at that off time, right? We talked about not having to stand in the line, not having to wade through people. And then I get all this extra time with my kids. So it's that slight tweak that just makes all the difference in the world.
The other place, when you said flexibility, that was a slight reframe, but it reminded me of travel rewards. This is another huge place where if we can be so flexible that we can go at not a prime time, right? When everybody is stuck at their 9 to 5, that's when you can go take your vacation. It reminds me, Brad, just a couple weeks ago, you were mentioning how you wanted to set up this kind of deal. So if an HVAC contractor wanted to keep his guys busy on any particular day of the week and was willing to do it for a significant discount, you could just have him come out on demand. What if you could apply that same principle to travel rewards? If the price is right, we can drop our plans and make it happen anytime because we don't have to jump through as many hoops as everybody else. We have the flexibility. We can decide what we want to do and build our life around that. And if that means that we are taking our trips when nobody else is there, even better, we have a private beach.
Yeah. And to your point about travel rewards, if you have flexibility, I always say that that is the single key to succeeding with travel rewards points and miles, is having flexibility. Flexibility with time, flexibility with destination, flexibility with airports you can fly in and out of. Like, any little level of flexibility that you can build in is just to your benefit. So yeah, I mean, if you can go at a moment's notice because you found some amazing availability that popped up on a flight to Europe and some hotels in Paris or some such, well, that's really pretty cool. I mean, I think it extends beyond actually using points and miles. It's if you find amazing deals. I mean, there are last minute deals all the time. And if you could just head off on a trip at a moment's notice or a couple of days in advance, you can find incredible deals. And that then gets into situations where you don't even need to use traditional points and miles. But like we've talked about in the past, you can use a card like the Capital One Venture or the Barclay card Arrival Plus and just wipe out that expense off your credit card bill. And I mean, if you're getting a $200 round trip flight to Europe, you don't really want to use normal points and miles. Again, that's that flexibility of having multiple currencies. So if you have a Venture or an Arrival Plus, if you find a great deal, just pay for it normal, right? Pay for it in cash, as they call it, with your credit card and just wipe out the expense. So again, just building this flexibility. That's what we're trying to paint the picture here, is any bit of flexibility you can build into your travel, your life, it just benefits you more than you can imagine almost at first glance.
And Brad, I think that actually ties to what you're doing this past weekend. You own your schedule. You have flexibility. You take a look and say, what does my family want to do first? And then based around what's left, choose FI and your other responsibilities get fit in. And that is perfect. That's amazing. And you know, it's a privilege to be able to build your life that way. But it's worth exploring. What are you going to do with that power? What are you guys doing this weekend, man?
Yeah. So we are heading down to Florida on spring break. It's cool. We did use rewards points since we were talking about that so much. I wanted to kind of mention this. We found this amazing hotel, this Hyatt Regency Coconut Point Resort. It's kind of in the Naples area and it just looks amazing. I think they said they have like four different pools, and you know how much my family loves pools. They have like a lazy river. They have all these huge water slides. So, I mean, it's like being at a resort essentially. And we got the whole thing for free. It was only 15,000 points a night. Actually, Jonathan, this is another one in my string of booking hotels. And then 2 months later, the hotel chain basically saying, oh yeah, we have to raise that in points per night. They raised it up a level. So since I booked, it actually has become 20,000 points per night. So I just kind of keep finding these sweet spots just randomly. So yeah, I mean, it's a huge benefit for us. We actually opened up one Hyatt credit card when they were offering a slightly larger bonus than is available now. And we were able to get five nights for free just from this credit card bonus on the Hyatt card, some spending on there. And we were able to actually then transfer over, I think it was only like 7,000 Chase Ultima rewards points to Hyatt. You know how Hyatt is one of my favorite transfer partners for Chase Ultima rewards. So what we were just, I think, like I said, 7,000 or 8,000 points short for the fifth night. So just transferred it over. And it just sums with the points we already had in there and booked the five nights and boom, got what amounted to a $400 per night hotel for five nights. So it would have been 2,000 bucks. And it was basically just from that one credit card bonus and just a few thousand Ultima Rewards points. So that was just a massive win for us.
That's incredible. You know, knowing how this game is, it makes it so much fun. And actually, it's tied to something we're going to do later in this episode. Our good friend Ed gave a talk with the Seattle Group about travel rewards, how to leverage them. And he's incredible with travel rewards. And over 50 people showed up for that event. And then what's really amazing about that is after the talk, about a dozen people ambushed him and he ended up talking for about another 80 minutes on it. So, you know, it's amazing. It does. You don't have to study this stuff forever. It doesn't take a master's degree, but it's not, you know, intuitive on day one. But if you can have someone just show you how it works, there are serious savings that can allow you to do this in a very fun and cost-effective way. So we're actually going to have Ed come on the show later in this episode to talk to us and give us some big takeaways that he passed away to the audience at this last meetup. I think that's going to be really, really valuable for our community. Now, let's take a few minutes and actually talk about this past week's episode with Gene Chatsky. Brad, I was so impressed by the content and the quality of her message, just what she brought to the conversation. And it's a conversation that me and you have been having and tiptoeing into, this idea of merging your money and your relationships. It's important, but it's also a delicate conversation and it requires kind of a soft touch because, as she rightly pointed out, it's not a one size fits all message. It's what works for you. And, but there should be some parameters on that, some guidelines, but I think she brought a very balanced approach to that message.
Yeah, she certainly did. And I was so impressed with how personal she got just with her own story. I mean, she really gave us a lot of detail on her own life. And like you said, I mean, she wrote this book. She has done a ton of research. She's obviously the financial editor for the Today Show. So she has some significant, significant history in this entire personal finance world. And it's just cool to have somebody like that on our show. But yeah, I mean, she's talking about the Her Money Happy Hours, these small group discussions that she holds around the country. And she said, here is a place where this is what we're going to talk about. We're going to schedule this. We're going to do it even if it's uncomfortable. It's giving ourselves permission to talk about these things that we're uncomfortable talking about. And sometimes that's what it takes. And Jonathan, you and I have talked about normalizing this conversation, right? Making this something you can talk about with friends, but most importantly, with your spouse or significant other.
Yeah, that's the part that I loved about it as well. And what's very interesting is that of all the different methods she has mentioned, I think I've kind of worked my way through most of them, not necessarily intentionally or out of any particular, anything having gone wrong, but just as my wife and I looked for that balance point, what worked for us, what made both of us feel enabled, like we had authority to make autonomous decisions. I think yours, mine, and ours is an incredibly valuable strategy. And we've kind of had different variations on that depending on what the goals are. The interesting thing about, you know, our personal relationship is that I'm the spender and my wife is probably the more naturally frugal person or more consistently frugal person. I can be a little bit extreme. I can be extremely frugal or an extreme spender depending on what my goals are or on a particular period of time. But on her, she's kind of more balanced. And so yours, mine, and ours, depending on our season of life, has been a pretty effective strategy for us.
Hold on. I want to drill down on this more because we have never done this. Laura and I haven't done that, but it does appeal to me. And I'm curious, you have yours, mine, and ours. Let's say like you come home as you're wont to do with five board games, right? You just spent $100 on board games. If it truly is your money, and I don't obviously want to get into the, you know, personal, like, does Danny give you a disapproving look? I don't mean like that, but like, is that truly okay? Or is it still as if it were our money? That's always been the hang up for me on like something like that, yours, mine, ours. It appeals to me intuitively, but I don't know if in practice it would still alleviate the issue that of spending the money and feeling guilty about it or being made to feel guilty about it. I'm curious, do you have any thoughts about that?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I think part of it is you have to look at your nature, both individually and collectively. So like if, you know, if there's spenders and there's savers, right? Do you have two spenders or two savers? You know, two spenders, that can be a cocktail for disaster. two savers, that probably describes you guys. And it kind of explains why you found that perfect balance point. Most of us end up somewhere in the middle where you have one on one end and one maybe kind of, and these aren't extreme ends, right? I mean, you can be on one end of the center or the other, but you kind of have your natural base. And we've seen that with a bunch of our guests as well. I think when you have someone specifically addressing the situation where you have one person that's the saver and ones that's maybe a little bit more on the spender side, you have to just look at what's happening in the background. So like when something shows up for you from Amazon, first of all, if it's a relatively rare occurrence, probably nothing's going to happen. But if you notice that you're having Amazon is airlifting packages to your door 3 or 4 days a week, and you notice that you're starting to get dirty looks on one end or the other, or you ever feel the inclination to do what Gene said and cut the tags off and pretend it's been there for a couple weeks, that's a good sign that you need to get on the same page. Like that's a sign that you're going to have to have a conversation. Ideally, both individuals would always operate inside of a common goal, a common budget. But in reality, people for various reasons or at different points in their life have different focuses. And if at any point in time you feel like you're hiding an element of your spending habits from your spouse or your partner, it's going to be difficult for you to make long-term progress. And it's probably going to become at some point a source of resentment. That's unfortunate, but it's just a human nature. And so I think almost a way to get around that is just to have a conversation about what your goals are. And you can do that using the monthly kind of budget party that Andy described, or in her case, just kind of having this time carved out for yourself. And that's just a good practice anyway. And then a way to slowly wind down the kind of maybe guilt factor / feeling like you need to hide this element from your partner would be just to say, hey, what is the range here for what's a reasonable amount for us to have our own authority? And honestly, like my wife, she rarely spends money like on herself, but she wants to get gifts for everybody. That's just her love language. And whether it's something that she's making from scratch or whether it's something that she's purchasing, like something for her nieces or nephews, she wants to get stuff for other individuals. Now, for me, you know that I'm a gadget guy. So like for me, I won't bat an eye at getting a gadget, but I look at those same things and that, you know, I'm like, well, okay, well, suddenly I'm very cost aware of how much we're spending on these individual items. And I get that there's some irony there. It's just my particular personality. How do you balance that when you have different values that are going in different places? The yours, mine, and ours gives you a framework for doing that. It doesn't mean that it's always necessary. Sometimes these things like self-resolve, like you're just in a phase of life, you move through that and you're back on the same page and it becomes less necessary. And that's why the model you may use can change over time. The budget party, the date party, whatever you want, you know, just the conversations about money on a regular basis give you the ability to fine tune that with your goals. The more focused you become on one goal, a common goal together, then the less you need this. But if you're kind of just like on autopilot, you may find at different times you need to have these types of conversations and give yourself the autonomy to make these types of decisions. So I think most people are dynamic with this. It's not a set and forget thing, but it's a conversation that's worth having.
Yeah. And I think that ties into a quote that Gene said, which is figure out what is going to cause the least stress in your relationship and do that. That's important. There's no set guidance. Even like one particular example that she found maybe a little bit odd to the ears is one woman got an allowance, which was basically like deposited money into her account that was similar to, I think, like her prior salary or something like that. But essentially it was an allowance. And that worked for that family. Is that going to work for most people? No, probably not. But figure out what works for you and your relationship and do that. I even see this in my life. And Jonathan, you would laugh at this. I'm the spender of the two of us, of me and Laura.
I think everybody listening to this is laughing at that right now. I know you, dude.
Well, imagine what that means for Laura, right? So, oh man, you can't stop laughing.
I just know Laura's listening. It's like, watch it, Brad, watch it.
She's been amazing. And this is one thing, like we actually had to have a conversation because I feel like I was buying like a couple little things. And again, in context here, I'm not spending very much money in the grand scheme of things, but I just was buying a couple of things. I was buying, I don't know, some like supplements and other health stuff. And I was just testing out new stuff. You know, it was a decent bit of money. And Laura looked at me and was like, I could tell she was saying like, what on earth are you doing to yourself? Why are you wasting your money? I just said to her, I'm like, just let me do this. Yeah, it would really mean a lot to me if you just let me do this. I understand there's a decent chance some of the stuff I'm going to throw out and just kind of fail, but I just want to test it out just for my own health. I mean, I'm not wasting money. I'm just trying to test some stuff out. And yeah, I mean, she was really wonderful and just kind of let me do this, even though I know it probably deep down wasn't her ideal situation, you know?
Yeah. And I think that's fair. And I think what's incredible about that, Brad, is that you are not this flawless, perfect human being who has never spent a suboptimal dollar in his life. That's not the bar right now. You're a human being that makes decisions, and some of them are most of them are super optimal, and some of them are, hey, this is life. And that's really, really cool. But the underpinnings there are that you and Laura have built a wonderful life for yourself, and she trusts you. You guys are absolutely a team. And that really ties to what Gene was talking about in the episode. You're a team. How do you get on the same page? It doesn't mean that every team member wants to do the exact same thing at every single moment, but collectively you're headed in the same direction.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And Gene said that this yours, mine, and ours, the purpose is to give each of you the freedom to be able to do things you want to do as individuals without having to A, ask permission, and B, feel badly about it. And that you should each use your time and money how you want if they are your priorities, right? And that's something we've talked about FI, this entire journey. It's what do you value? What are your priorities? But the most important thing is that you're a team and that you're on the same page, right? So it goes way back to what we were talking about way back 8 minutes ago. It's what is going to work for you as a team. It's not what's going to work for the Barretts or the Mendonces. It's what's going to work for you. Figure out a system and move forward, but do it by communicating. That's the crucial piece here.
The other half of this conversation that we need to spend some time on is finding the range for your job and then making sure, right, that you are on the upper end of it or working to be on the upper end of that. And what was so interesting about Gene is these actual hard tactics that she gave us for making sure that happens and working through and tying your own personal money story to that. And it was interesting, you know, although she was talking about it really from the context of women and money, the stories that she laid out, both of us had personal experiences where we had been on the same side of that. An employer told us the range, asked us how much we wanted. We didn't ask for the upper end of the range, or we settled, right? And you gave an explicit example of that, but I certainly was aware of that as well. And I think let's just take the audience back and let's start with what situation you found yourself in. And then maybe we can tie that, although she was talking about it very clearly from the aspect of women with money. Both of us as individuals have stories that kind of mirror that experience. So let's start with your story first. In that particular episode, you basically said that when it came time for promotions, when it came time for a raise, you went to your boss, you knew what the range was. He told you what the range was, and then he didn't give you the upper end of it. And what is that? What's that internal monologue? I'm a mediocre accountant, so I only get a mediocre raise. I mean, is that what happened?
No. Well, I mean, I didn't like my job, but no, I mean, fortunately, I was better than a mediocre accountant. I mean, and that was part of the frustrating thing here. But, you know, I think psychologically, the VP of my department always told me I was, I don't know, one of, if not the highest rated person in the department. And he was always trying to go to bat for me to get higher raises. But because it was this, you know, crusty old Fortune 500 level company, there are rules to that, you know, and this goes back to things that we've talked about with multiple guests of sometimes you need to leave to get a bigger raise, or you have to get an offer. Like Jean said, she was talking about her husband. You need to get an offer from a different company to actually get them to move on this. And I never did that. I never even thought to do that, Jonathan. So I just got my little 3 or 4% raise. And again, I was always told it was one of, if not the highest in the department. And I was content with that. And I think I don't know what it was. It's ridiculous. I mean, I probably didn't negotiate when I first got my job offer there. So I was probably already behind the ball. Even when I got promoted to a manager, I didn't get a huge bump. You don't get a bump that equates you to a manager at a different company. It's just you get your little salary increase. I think I got maybe like double the salary increase, but it's still maybe a 8% raise instead of a 4% or 7% or something like that. You know, it was tiny. So this just built up year after year. And I hope I'm explaining this right, because it's hard for me to kind of even remember what I was thinking. And this all ties into it, though. This is difficult psychologically. This is not easy when the power figure in your department says, oh, you're doing great, we love you, blah, blah, blah. And that, you know, they're showering you with compliments. And then I'm going
to ultimate compliment is on my W-2 paycheck, sir.
Right, right. I mean, that's, you know, I should know that that's all that matters, but I was content with that for some reason. And, you know, Gene asked me to put myself in my shoes there. And if you noticed, I kind of stumbled because it's hard. It's hard to know what you're thinking when you're really not thinking. Maybe you aren't armed with the information that you need. And I hope that's what this podcast does for all the listeners. By us talking about this, by talking about our own foibles and the guests who should have done this and should have done that, but now we have the information. That's the cool thing. You can talk about it. And then when the listener out there is saying, I'm in this situation, I remember Brad screwed this up. Like, I hope that provides some level of comfort for them and that ability to say, I need to do better. So I hope my stupid situation and me earning tens upon tens of thousands of dollars less over my 12-year career at that company than I should have, I hope that helps other people out there.
And I want to make sure this is super actionable, because even listening to your example, I could see someone being in that same spot where they're like, well, what do I do? And what if they say no? So I was a pharmacist, and you know, you were talking about 3, 4, and 8% raises. Like, we were lucky, like to get a raise was great. And maybe it would bump in between 1 and 3%. Maybe. I don't even know if I ever got a 3% raise. It was barely a cost of living adjustment. And you would get like a bonus. This was the workaround for it. You'd get a bonus, and it was a very small bonus. This is not like a Goldman Sachs bonus. This is a very, very small bonus. But I remember that the one end, you know, kind of the soft talk being, oh, you're a wonderful performer. You're doing all these amazing things. And it builds that loyalty, right? But simultaneously, like the raise that came along with it was somewhat underwhelming. So what do you do? Well, one, this is my thought process. And I did some of this now, and there's things that I didn't do, but this is what I would do. One, find the range, right? And so this is relatively easy to do, you know, on a kind of inaccurate basis. I would start by going to one of the internet pay checkers, right? So you could type in pharmacist in Richmond, Virginia, and find out the pay scale for your area. You could then look at the surrounding areas. You know, in my particular area, pharmacists were making somewhere between 100 to 120, somewhere in that. If you went down to like the Hampton Roads area, you would find that pharmacists would actually make 10,000 more. I mean, it's weird, like these kind of variances inside the same state, but different areas would pay at different levels. What you could do on top of that, and this is what I didn't do, you could also find out what competitors are making. So you could lean on your network to find out what they're making at other corporations that kind of have a similar job. And this is where I didn't do, because I had this loyalty to my company, right? Oh, I've been here, I've put the time in, I'm going to work my way up through the ranks. Like, I will be rewarded for my loyalty. Unfortunately, in the corporate world, you rarely are. And this was what was such an eye-opening moment for me. The outliers are the people that are willing to go outside of that loyalty, essentially, and look across the street, because you need that to force your employer's hand. Because I remember sitting at my performance review and having that conversation and them telling me, you've done amazing, we've really appreciated all the progress that you've made in this location. But, you know, it's kind of tight this year, corporate's down, they're lowering the raises across, whatever. It's not going to be as much as you had hoped for, type deal. Oh, okay. No, like that was the end of the conversation. Well, are you sure? I'm really good at my job. Are you sure? That's basically where it stopped. That next step, if you really want to force the hand, I mean, honestly, if you want to force the hand, it's to go get another offer. It's to go across the street and see what a competitor is offering. And then based on that, either one, take the offer, or two, go back and say, I've been offered this salary. Is this something that you can compete with, to bring that back? What's interesting is that there are people that do this, and there are people that don't. And the people that do this, if they do it consistently over a period of time, are going to make tens of thousands of dollars more than you, both on an annual basis and over the sum of their career, probably that's going to move into the six figures and beyond. This is just what some people do. For some individuals where this conversation has been normalized, where they realize that this is just the way that corporations work, this is what they do. The sooner you can put this in your toolbox, and I don't mean do it with tactics, get real strategies. Don't be a jerk. Don't be disrespectful, but understand that there are other people that are doing this successfully. No matter how many compliments your employer, you know, showers you with, ultimately they're telling you how much they value you with your paycheck, right? I mean, that's just that is ultimately what they're saying. And last thing I want to say is for highly compensated individuals. So pick your thing. You hear about a Friends actor that was making $1 million an episode, or someone that was a baseball player that's making absurd amounts of money, or someone in a nonprofit that's making ridiculous sums of money, whatever it may be, or take your job. In order for your employer to hire you, to have you, you have to be justifying an amount that's in excess of that, right? You have to be bringing some additional value to the company. So a baseball player that just got a contract for $50 million, the employer isn't paying the baseball player $50 million because he can hit baseballs 360 odd feet more than 30% of the time. They're paying them that sum of money because they are bringing, they're adding value to the brand in excess, far in excess of what they're being paid. So if you can identify the value that you're bringing to the company, it's good for your own ability to then navigate your next job. It's also good for your ability inside of that role to justify an increase in pay. So start thinking about that. Start thinking about what have you actually produced? What have you done? Not your personality characteristics, but what have you actually done in the company? And throughout the course of the year, be documenting that, tracking that, both to present that to your employer as a justification for giving you a raise, or as a justification for going across the street.
Yeah. And this whole aspect of asking for more, you know, Gene was talking about it, obviously, in the context of women. And I think clearly that's important. But we're talking about this afflicts everybody. We all need this information. But I did want to go back to the wage gap that's facing women. And she said, this is still a significant issue. Maybe it's getting slightly better, but ever so slightly. I mean, this is an issue. And she's talking about with women, like the easiest way to talk about your salary, which is still hard. I mean, this is very, very difficult. You could read about it on Glassdoor and get a range, but the person down the hall, you're usually not going to have that conversation with. She said, talk about it when you're leaving, when you're walking out the door, be transparent to the other women in your office, in your department, and really, in essence, you're helping them. And she said, sharing that info is essential. And that is really what she's found is the best time to do it. But she's talking about these hurdles that are facing women. They're living these different arcs. When you really think about it, like they're being caregivers for children. And then Jean said, which I didn't even think about, Jonathan, many women are being caregivers for their own parents. For whatever reason, this falls societally disproportionately on women. I mean, that has to impact their career arc. It just does. And I guess Jean's advice was to keep a foot in the workforce. And I thought that was an interesting phrase. She's not meaning you have to work full-time or even part-time, but just keep that foot in. Keep your contacts refreshed. This is kind of paraphrasing Jean here. Keep your contacts refreshed. Take maybe one little project on, or keep your LinkedIn profile updated. And she said, just don't disappear. I thought that was just really good advice. Just keep that foot in the door, in that industry. Just stay in touch so that you're not out of sight and out of mind. That's just really simple advice, but it's, I mean, to me, that's incredibly effective.
It also ties itself to both imposter syndrome and what is the story you tell yourself about yourself. Jean made this very compelling point that women, especially, you know, as motherhood is a real thing, as their kids are going to swim practice, whatever else, they start to feel that pull, like, hey, my attention is divided between family activities and work activities. And it's almost like the story they tell themselves is, although it's not true, that they have become and are a mediocre employee. Now, what she said that was so interesting and true is that men are in the same place too. Men have these, are dealing with many of these same things as well. But when it comes to negotiation time, at a macro level, they don't seem to let that hold themselves back from asking for raises. Where it's almost like that kind of where with women, they're harder on themselves with regards to these additional responsibilities, caring for their spouse, caring for their kids. And they almost feel like because of that, they don't feel justified asking for the raise. So I think one, getting rid of that whole imposter syndrome thing, focusing on that story, you know, what is the story you tell yourself about yourself? And at making sure that this is the frame that you have a tool bag to make sure that you go into the negotiating table with the right frame of mind. And then there's a couple other tools that we've talked about in other episodes that I don't want to miss just because we're focused on what Jean talked about. One is, depending on your industry, leveraging recruiters. These are individuals that have an incentive alignment to help you earn more money, right? Because they want to get you to leave one job to go to another. So if you don't feel strongly enough about doing this on your own, make sure that you're cultivating these relationships with recruiters so that they can do some of this heavy lifting for you and help identify opportunities that might be a good fit. And then the other half of that is that LinkedIn profile. The other half of LinkedIn is your resume. You know, if you are having trouble writing your resume, hire someone to redo your resume. You know, have someone come in to buff it up and to make sure that it's relevant for the current age. So those are just a few other ideas. And we've talked about those in other episodes, which we can link to in the show notes. But I just think that having a resume that helps cultivate the story that you tell yourself about yourself, having a LinkedIn profile that is relevant, having a foot in the workforce, keeping that network up to date. I can see what Jean is saying. If you find yourself out of the workforce for 10 years and then you haven't done any of this, it's going to be a little bit daunting just to start over. But if you've just done a bare minimum, maintaining the network, worked on a few projects here and there as it fit into your schedule, it's going to help you feel more confident about that story that you're telling yourself about yourself. And subsequently, it's going to be helpful when you're negotiating that next salary bump. So, you know, this equation is what you earn minus what you spend is equal to the difference or the gap. And depending on where the conversation takes us, we focus on all sides of the equation. But I think today, spending a few minutes talking about the earning side of the equation is incredibly valuable. Well, you know, as I kind of referenced at the beginning of this episode, I wanted to spend a little bit of time today talking about travel rewards. And the subtext for this is that our good friend Ed, who actually works with us here at ChooseFI, gave an amazing talk at a Seattle meetup group. I think that was attended by well over 50 people. And I think there were over a dozen people that after this 2-hour travel reward session happened, actually spent another 80 minutes with him picking his brain on specific travel scenarios. I don't think that is unique to Seattle. People in our community are very interested in travel rewards. And while many of us, most of us, hopefully have listened to episode 9 of our podcast or have gone to chooseFI.com/travel as the perfect place to start, after they get a good foundation for, you know, how to do travel rewards, they are now starting to look for more focused answers to a specific trip that they want to take. So I thought, Ed, we could have you on the show to talk a little bit about, you know, some actionable takeaways for our audience, but also to introduce a new kind of segment for our show going into this year.
That sounds awesome. Let's get going.
All right. So what do you think, and maybe you can help me polish this, do you think there would be value if people in our community were to have travel rewards questions where they could kind of say, hey, I want to take this trip at the beginning of next year and I'm either starting from scratch or I'm going from this location and I want to go here. Like, is that something that would be fun to turn that into a segment on the podcast?
Yeah, I think so. I think Brad previously did just that for folks that he used to know. I think that was back when he was working his dopey accountant job. Is that right, Brett?
Yeah, that's right.
Not asking for raises.
Not asking for raises. Exactly. So I was thinking, yeah, I might just do that for maybe a finite period, let's say for the next couple of months. What we'll do is we'll take some mailbag questions pertaining to specific travel scenarios and dig in and find them answers and figure out how to get them there for the least amount of points and for the most amount of fun.
And I think we should like set some context here on the show. Over the past couple weeks, Brad and I have just mentioned, just in passing, this incredible trip that you pieced together for your family. But let's almost take a step back and like have you tell our community about that. What were you able to pull off? Because we just started the show talking about flexibility, right? Talking about the ability when you control your time, the world opens up to you. You quite literally are the prototypical case study for that.
Yeah, you know, when you control your time, you can do amazing things. And so we decided to opt out of the public school system because we really valued the ability to control our time. Yeah, and so on the work side of things, I basically work out of my laptop so I could run my businesses anywhere in the world.
You're like an OG digital nomad, man.
I'm the OG digital nomad. Very well said.
Indeed. I bet you that domain is taken, but if not, you could go snipe it.
I don't think my wife would like me to add on like the 101st domain name into my collection. So I'll leave that on the table. Anyone else can get it.
Tell us about this trip, man. What did you guys do?
So I like to start with the most interesting thing that we did as a family, which was being in a place on the Mongolian steppes where we stayed in the homestead of a golden eagle hunter and basically trained with his family, learning how to hunt with golden eagles. I'm really glad that there was food that was brought in because I caught nothing.
All right, this doesn't translate on the podcast, but I've seen pictures and we'll put them in the show notes. You guys are on horseback. You're completely geared up for incredibly rugged weather. And there are golden eagle, it's traditional hunting in Mongolia. There's a golden eagle or a falcon on your arm, and you guys are going out into this kind of barren wilderness and hunting for the duration of the day. Is that's close to accurate?
Yeah, and the reason why I led with this story about my family and Mongolia is that it was inspired by my daughter, Ashley, who saw a Nat Geo documentary about a girl in a Muslim community who broke all kinds of gender barriers by choosing to compete with grown men in this Kazakh tradition of golden eagle hunting. And so she was the first girl to compete and she beat all the other grown men. And so my daughters came to me and said, Dad, I want to do that. And so Dad had to go figure out how to get the whole family there. And then since we're going to be there anyway, let's tag on another 4 months of travel in Asia since we're going to be there.
Wow, Ed. So that really is what precipitated the whole trip. Ashley's desire to follow through what she saw in Nat Geo.
Yeah, exactly. Ashley knew her dad was a crazy travel nerd and had absolute faith in her dad being able to make it happen. On the other hand, I had no idea how I was going to make it happen, but fast forward a year or so and it did come to pass.
So for context, I remember in high school when we are learning about marine biology, we got to watch a 15-minute DVD, right? Or I guess VHS tape at this particular point in time. But like in your case, you guys want to learn about a topic, you actually go and spend 4 months or 3 months traveling around 6 or 7 different countries. I think if I remember correctly, you actually had your kids put together like a video series based around all the different things that they saw and explored.
Yeah, I mean, it's the ultimate education hack, right? Like I could lecture them about Mongolia or Japan or China or Cambodia and all the other 8 countries that we were in. Or I could make them produce a video. And then now they're writing scripts, they're asking me questions, they are on points for doing the research. And plus, they now learn how to edit videos and get videos up on YouTube and do all the social media marketing around that. Yeah, I think it's a win-win-win.
That's amazing, Ed. So how did they learn all those skills? I mean, was this just learned on the fly? Did they study beforehand? Obviously, you're going to Mongolia to do this eagle hunting once. So you don't want to have the lens cap on or something like that. How did they learn how to do all this video shooting and editing beforehand?
Yeah, the kids were using iPhones primarily. We started the trip with a big digital SLR, but I was like, this is too dang heavy. I'm just going to leave it behind at my mom's house in Singapore. But I'm a huge believer in, fail fast, fail small, fail often, and then fail forward. And so, yeah, with this whole project, it's their first ever project. It's not going to be the best they'll ever do in their lives, but it was a great way to get started. So is it perfect? Heck no. But it's definitely good enough. And I've, as you guys know, I've never let perfect be the enemy of good enough. So it's out there in the world now.
Yeah, I think fail forward is the key part of that. But you don't, it's hard to know what you're doing wrong or what you need to improve on if you're not doing anything, if you're just, you know, paralysis by analysis. And that's what I love about the project your kids put together. I watched several of the video clips. I was so amazed by, honestly, the production quality that they had pieced together, the voiceover work they'd done, and they've just built this incredible talent stack. But all of that is built on top of this foundation of actually seeing the world. I mean, that so few kids get that experience. It's just amazing. And I would, for the context of travel rewards, which arguably is the least important part of this conversation, what did this trip actually cost you? Because you guys went to at least six, maybe it was eight countries over a period of like 6 months. What does this cost? It seems like this would be out of reach for pretty much anybody.
Well, I did the math. It would have cost slightly north of $65,000 for a group of four people, a family of four people. But because of the travel rewards over the last several years that I've been working at collecting travel points and travel miles, it cost around $5,000 and a buttload of points.
That is amazing. I can't even begin to imagine how you put that together, but you don't start with that. And I would imagine that's probably the most ambitious trip that I've ever heard of. But based on that experience, you have to put together enough tactics and strategies to basically be able to figure out how to get anywhere, right?
I've yet to figure out a way to hack my way to the moon, but pretty close.
Wow, Ed. So this is a 5 to 6 month trip, 8+ countries. You saved $60,000 using rewards points. Can you give me a sense, just real quick, how many nights roughly in hotels that you use points for and the total number of flights? Did you fly economy? Were you doing business class? Give us a sense of that.
Let's see, it was mostly business class flights, except for some low-cost carriers within Southeast Asia. We were in hotels for just over 80 nights. And one way I was able to stretch my miles with the hotels was with both the Marriott as well as Hilton groups. Yeah, you get a fifth night free if you redeem for 5 nights. So that was really helpful. That was basically getting 25% more nights.
Awesome.
And looking at the numbers, it cost me 864,000 American Express member rewards points, 180,000 United Airlines miles, 532,000 Chase Ultimate rewards points, and 192,000 of the now defunct Starwood Preferred Guest points. So yeah, a lot of points over 3 years.
Yeah, but to save $60,000, that sounds like a real, just amazing win. And really, at the heart of it, an amazing life experience for you and your family. So that is, I talk about planning worth the time, right? Not only actually planning this trip, like you said, like how are we going to get to Mongolia and do this eagle hunting, but accumulating all these points over many years and putting all of your spending on these cards and earning bonuses. I mean, this was a significant amount of effort, but wow. You can't make up a trip like that. That's remarkable, you know?
And I think everybody listening to this suddenly now wants to go hunting with eagles in Mongolia. I'm sure that's every, well, maybe not, but most people have something that they have wanted to do and for whatever reason has thought it's out of reach. What I was hoping that we could do, and I think you're game for this, is maybe set up a weekly thread in our Facebook group where individuals over the next several weeks can post the trip that they want to take and, you know, post the location that they need to travel from. You know, if you say, hey, I want to go to Disney World next year, or, hey, I want to take my family of four to Costa Rica next year, or whatever it is, we can have this one weekly thread where people can post and you can look through those and pick a case study. And then we can then roll that out on the show as a case study. And you can kind of help these individuals figure out how to put a game plan in place. Would you be up for that?
Well, it sure beats having to fly everywhere across the country. So yeah, I'll be up for that.
Yes, your other option was one-on-one meetings with every local group around the world. All right, cool, man. Well, here's what we're going to do. If you're an individual listening to this and you're like, oh, I want to be a part of that, I want to get my case study featured on the show, take my family on this trip, just go to choosify.com/askEd. choosify.com/askEd. Ed, and we will be doing this thread over the next several weeks and hopefully have some really cool conversations that will benefit the entire Chooseify audience. So Ed, really excited that you came on the show today, man.
Man, this is like a dream come true. So thank you.
And if you're not already in our Facebook group, definitely join us. That's where this conversation is happening. Over 200,000 comments a month. The ultimate crowdsourced personal finance community. We just love having your input. And honestly, it's what drives the show. So we're so grateful that you're a part of it. Zach, I thought we could take a few minutes and talk about what's going on in the community. What do you got for us this week?
All right, Jonathan. So we had so many cool things happening in the group. And the thing that really struck me was the Houston gardening meetup. It was incredible. There was an amazing video that the guys did over there.
Yeah, Zach, this was amazing. They actually created a YouTube video on this, and we'll link it up in the show notes. But this was at Lee and Jazz's home there in Houston. And actually, Jonathan, you and I met them at Camp Fi Mid-Atlantic, I think it was, last year. And just really cool people. And they had this gardening meetup where I guess they created a bunch of like raised beds and just it looked like had some food afterwards and just had like a grand old time. I don't know if the ultimate goal is to have a community garden or something. I mean, wouldn't that be an awesome idea for local groups across the country and across the world? But we'll have to follow up them for sure. But regardless, it just looked like a really fun time.
And Zach, there are so many people going to these different meetups. Is there a way that we can help share what cool local groups are actually doing with our community using our own social media platform?
Absolutely, Jonathan. So if you guys in a local group are creating amazing videos like this or just want to showcase what you've been experiencing together in the community, go ahead and mention us at ChooseFI Radio on Instagram with a video and just put our name in the description so everybody in the ChooseFI community can kind of check out what you're doing, because this gardening video was absolutely phenomenal. They used drones and all kinds of B-roll camera footage. It was just great.
Awesome, man. Other really cool stuff going on in the community. The Pittsburgh group had a fantastic meetup this past week, shared experiences, applying minimalism to FI principles. This really is interesting. There is so much overlap between minimalism and financial independence. And it's so interesting that many of us found one versus the other. You know, in our case, obviously financial independence for me. And as I go farther down this rabbit hole, I find out more and more about minimalism and I see the overlap. Other people come from the other side. And inevitably you end up, as soon as you start getting more intentional, start focusing more on your finances. So just kind of an interesting thing there and something to be paying attention to going into the next year. Buffalo had their successful first meeting. They're already up to 88 members. And Austin is having a gathering on April 6th at Domain Central Park to discuss what's your why retire early and why be frugal. Denver's meeting on March 30th at Improper City. It actually looks like Mr. 1500 and Mindy Jensen, Mrs. 1500 from Bigger Pockets, as well as Physician on Fire are going to be there at that event. New Facebook groups this past week. There's a Northwest Indiana, a Gary, Indiana, a Saskatchewan.
Saskatchewan. Saskatchewan.
A Saskatchewan, Canada. Man, did I get through that? I think I said that right. Dayton, Ohio, and East Tennessee, Northern Colorado, and a Winchester, Front Royal City in Virginia. So a bunch of new groups this week. Find a local group near you. You can just go to chooseify.com/local. All right, to our audience, hopefully you're already in a local group. If you have not yet found one, the easiest way to do that, just go to chooseify.com/local and find a local group near you. Unfortunately, that's going to bring this episode to a close. Now, as you know, we'd like to finish every episode by doing a drawing for a copy of a book that we have found useful. There's three books that we offer. The first is J.L. Collins' book, The Simple Path to Wealth. The second is Dominic Cortuccio's book, Design Your Future. And the third book by Vincent Puglisi, Freelance to Freedom. If you want to enter the drawing, all you need to do is just go to chooseify.com/iTunes, follow the instructions there and leave us a short written review. Then send us an email to feedback@chooseify.com, letting us know that you left a review and what screen name you left it under. We give away one book for every five written reviews that we get, and we announce a winner on the Friday roundup. Brad, how many winners do we have today?
All right, Jonathan, we have one winner today, and the winner is Rachel. And she said, "This is changing my world. I've fallen in love with FI and gone down the rabbit hole with this podcast. Already, we have saved $10,000 per year by making changes to our healthcare, phone bills, cleaning service, though I admit I will miss this one, and taxes."
I hear you on that one.
How great is that, right?
Minimalism.
We've started travel rewards and we'll be going to Norway and won't pay a penny for accommodations. After listening to the episode on teaching FI to kids, my five-year-old and I have started her a business where she makes bread in the bread machine, and we are learning the principles of saving and spending with her earnings. There's so much more I could say, but Brad and Jonathan, I would give you both a hug if I could.
Accepted. What an incredible community, Brad. I absolutely love being a part of it. And my friends, the fire is spreading. We'll see you next time as we continue to go down the road less traveled.
You've been listening to Choose FI Radio Podcast, where we help middle-class America build wealth, one life hack at a time.